I didn't want to let him. "Promise me," I said. "Promise me you'll come back."
"Of course I will, Maldol," he said, taking my face in his hands,
wiping away my tears with his thumbs. He kissed me on the lips, then brought my hand to his mouth and kissed it, almost on top of the engagement ring. Though I didn't realize it at the time, this was a trick to make me let go of him. And then, suddenly, I was cold. I closed my coat and watched Wayne bound onto the bus, giving the driver a chummy clap on the shoulder as he passed. We walked home. Tiggy had to lead me because I'd forgotten the way. She kept saying it would get easier, but never easy. On some level, I knew it. My brothers have been gone a year already. Tiggy's brother, nearly two. But this time, it's different. This is my love. The realness, the rawness of the emotion have Amelia shaking like a leaf. She looks up from the page. Would Molly have wanted this? Some stranger in her bedroom, reading what would turn out to be the most painful experience of her life? No, absolutely not. No girl would. Except, what if Molly wrote the recipes inside? There is a good chance of this. The timing is right. Amelia carefully thumbs through the entire diary, gently scanning each page, not reading, but allowing her gaze to land lightly here and there, a word, a number, something recorded in a way that resembles a recipe or a list of ingredients. If she finds something, she'll pull out the relevant pages, show Grady only what he needs to see, and maintain Molly's privacy. When she reaches the end, she goes back through once more, just to be sure. But no, there's nothing. And yet she can't bring herself to put the diary back under Molly's bed. Chapter 20. Grady and Amelia spend the rest of the day digging through Molly's office. The fan he's bought doesn't provide relief so much as a disappointingly warm wind, but she is grateful that Grady locks it so it blows primarily in her direction. At the end of first shift, Kate texts Amelia and lets her know that she and a few of the other girls are heading to the lake, and does Amelia want to come with? Ugh, I should stay and keep looking, but hopefully I can meet you guys there in a bit. Amelia knows it's a stretch. It's not as if they seem any closer to finding anything, but she is trying to remain hopeful. She readies herself for a bit of pushback from Kate, maybe a guilt trip that Kate had to work the whole shift without her, or a bit of teasing. But Kate doesn't even respond. Amelia has been attacking the oldest files, Grady the newest. Grady moves with assembly line speed, setting aside anything he thinks might be helpful for his business plan, sending everything else through his brand new shredder, which he picked up with the fan at Walmart. Amelia winces every time the shredder's blades whirl. This takes care of any lingering remorse she might feel about slipping Molly's diary inside her tote bag. But Grady is making better time with the job, that's for sure. Amelia's pace is far slower, in part because her boxes contain more mementos and ephemera, especially the ones from the late 1940s and early 1950s when Molly was just starting out. She's tempted to read everything, and Amelia can't determine what, if anything, she should shred. An ad in the Sand Lake Ledger from 1947? A certificate of recognition from the Sand Lake Chamber of Commerce? And what about all the photos? Of summer picnics at the farmhouse, of the girls at the county fair, and what seems like an annual tradition of the stand girls posing in front of Mead Creamery, their scooping arms flexed, exactly like they had the first year in business. Why did that end? She wonders, and examines the faces in each one, looking to spot town residents, noticing how hairstyles changed, in curls one summer,
up another, then cut into bobs. Eventually, she sets them aside in a separate, neat pile. Grady might throw them away eventually or shred them, but she's not going to be the one to do that. While she tries to lose herself in the work, her thoughts drift back to Molly's first diary entry, her goodbye kiss with Wayne. Even though Amelia doesn't think she ever actually heard Molly's voice, she can imagine it now, somewhere faintly inside her, urging him to promise to come back to her, with no idea that it would be the last time she ever laid eyes on him. Amelia's eyes begin to tear, her throat tighten. A tear rolls down her cheek. It is so tragically romantic. "Whoa," Grady says, his blue eyes intent on her. "You okay?" "Ugh, it's so dusty in here," she complains, dabbing at her eyes with her sleeve and shifting the direction of the fan. And only then does she peek over at Grady to see if he's bought her performance. Only he's not watching her anymore. Grady's got a bundle of papers in his lap, and from his stunned blinking, Amelia assumes they are something. "What did you find?" she asks, crawling toward him. He glances up, startled, and as Amelia nears, he seems to want to hide whatever's in his hands. "Grady?"
"These are letters my mom sent to Molly."
Amelia sucks in a breath.
"Whoa, I bet she'll get such a kick out of seeing them. You should send them to her."
Grady lowers his head and rubs the back of his neck, which makes Amelia feel suddenly unsure.
"I mean, maybe wait until she's home from New Zealand. I don't know how much international postage costs. Probably a lot." He wets his lips.
"These are from my real mom," he explains. "She died when I was 6. My dad married Quinn a year or so later. That's who raised me, basically."
Avoiding her eyes, he passes over a stack of envelopes held together by an old rubber band. They're addressed to Molly Mead. The return address is from a Diana Denton Mead.
"Oh.
She got cancer. The summer she and I spent in Sand Lake was her last one."
She passes the letters back to him. Maybe this, and not the heat, is why Grady's confined himself to one room of the farmhouse.
"I'm so sorry."
"It's fine. I've tried not to think too much about it."
Except Amelia knows he has thought about it, at least once. The moment he tasted home sweet home, the sadness she saw in those lake eyes. Grady sets the bundle on the mantel and goes back to flipping through a bank ledger. Maybe he'll read them once she's gone. Or maybe he won't. By the end of the night, what sounds like 1,000 crickets are chattering away in the dark, and they still haven't found the recipes. Grady says tiredly,
"I'll drive you home."
Outside, it's much cooler, almost cold. The girls have already placed the evening deposit bag with the receipts in the mailbox. Grady sticks it in his waistband, then loads Amelia's bike into the trunk of the pink Cadillac while she climbs into the passenger side. The seats are deep and made of smooth tan leather. On the way down the driveway, Amelia says, "We should probably check the stock, see how much the girls sold today." Grady doesn't slow down.
"I'd rather not."
So Amelia directs him to her house. His mind seems to be elsewhere, but he does make the correct turns. He pulls up to the curb and she asks him, "Have you asked your dad? Would he know something about the recipes?" Grady shakes his head nervously, as if answering both questions at once, and puts the car in park. Amelia tries again. "Well, maybe he'll have some advice for you about what to do."
"Come on. You don't need a business degree to know that an ice cream shop can't stay open without ice cream to sell."
"Right,
But here's the thing, Amelia. I can't fail.
He leans back, his hands in his lap, and stares at the roof of the Cadillac, his shoulders sagging like he already has. It's clear Grady has a weird relationship with his dad, and he has his own emotional ties to Mead Creamery. But do those things add up to this level of anxiety? Because Grady's making it seem like Mead Creamery going under is on par with the end of the world. She thinks of Kate's warning. Grady could be trying to play her. I don't want the stand to fail either. This place is as important to me as it is to you. Amelia is almost sure their reasons are different, but what does that matter now? He rolls his head toward her.
So, what do we do?
She closes her eyes and takes a deep breath. How hard do you think it is to make ice cream? He shrugs.
I wouldn't know.
It's not like Molly had any formal training. We have her whole setup, and most of the ingredients. Her strawberry jam, her fudge sauce, the vanilla beans she has soaking in that random syrup. Maybe we can find ice cream recipes that use those ingredients and see how close we can get.
What about Home Sweet Home?
Home Sweet Home will probably stay a mystery, she concedes, getting out of the car. But 3 out of 4 flavors would be enough to keep the stand in business. Meanwhile, we keep looking for the recipes. We'll find them eventually. Calling after her, Grady says,
You're making this sound easy,
she calls back. Look for green lights, not stop signs, remember? For the first time that day, Grady laughs.
What idiot told you that?
Amelia's mom is still awake when she comes through the door. Oh, you waited up?
No, I was coming to get some water. Kate dropped you off?
Yes, Amelia lies, because she doesn't want to get into it right now. She glances at her phone. There's still no text from Kate. Not since her afternoon invitation to the lake. Well, good night. Upstairs, Amelia gets ready for bed. She texts Kate. Sorry, I never made it, and then brushes her teeth. Kate's response comes as Amelia moves on to flossing. Any luck? No, hopefully tomorrow. Amelia carries her phone back into her bedroom, watching as Kate types a response. And then Kate stops. It takes another few seconds until Amelia climbs into bed and pulls the blankets up to her chin before Kate types again. Kay. Amelia sets her phone down. Kate's clearly annoyed with her, probably because she was abandoned for an entire shift today. And since she just volunteered to try making ice cream tomorrow, there's a good chance Amelia won't be around for that shift either. The best thing that could happen on all fronts is that Amelia finds the recipes ASAP. Though she's tired, she opens Molly's diary and begins reading. November 29th, 1944. I've been trying to help Daddy with his chores, not that he lets me do any real work, even though everything is falling behind without Liam and Pat and now Wayne around. He threw me out of the barn yesterday. That's how much he did not enjoy the sight of his only daughter dripping with sweat during the first dusting of snow, shoveling a knee-deep pile of dung in the cow stalls. I can't say I enjoyed it either, but he needs help, and I desperately want to do something. Being physical did ease some of the heartache for me, calluses aside. But no, Daddy says my job is to be a comfort to Mother. I would really like nothing more, except Mother steeps herself in her sadness like her tea, never lifting the bag out, letting the hot water go black and bitter and cold. I don't blame her. She has so many worries. My brothers and Wayne, the business, Daddy, me. The only time she is happy is when she's making wedding plans for Wayne and me. Tiggy thinks I'm a fool because I've let her take the reins on pretty much everything, but if I didn't, I don't know if she'd ever smile. Amelia turns the page, intending to read the next entry, but her eyes can't quite focus. Her Molly Mead history lesson will have to wait until tomorrow. Chapter 21. Amelia's not sure if it's an omen or a sign or what exactly, but she skids her bike to an abrupt stop about halfway between the stand and the farmhouse, sure as anything that Molly Mead is gazing down on her right this moment. The wild grasses on this stretch of the driveway grow nearly as tall as Amelia and as dense as a thicket on both sides. Blossoming among the tall grass are hundreds of wildflowers in a rainbow of colors and textures and sizes. This she's seen many times over the years, but never as it is in this moment. It's just after 7, and the morning dew still clings to everything, a sparkling coat refracting the sunshine like the dust of 1,000 diamonds. Goosebumps prick on her arms and legs. Amelia sees now why Molly brought flowers for the girls each and every time she brought new ice cream down to the stand. How could anyone pass this and not try to capture some of the beauty? Of course, by the time the girls rolled into work at 11, the dew had long disappeared, and they were left with pretty blooms arranged for them in a mason jar, a simple thank you from their boss. She puts down her kickstand and walks toward the brush, finding the most beautiful flowers and pinching their stems. She makes a bouquet of pink and yellow cone flowers and foxtail lilies and bee balm. It's too much to hold and try to steer her handlebars, so she leaves her bike where it is. She doesn't bother turning on the lights. She finds the mason jar on top of the filing cabinet, fills it with water, and arranges the bouquet inside. On the back of a paper napkin, she writes, "Have a great day, girls. XOX, Amelia." Grady has left the inside door of the farmhouse open, and Amelia steps through the screen door gingerly, careful not to let Moo out. There's music coming up through the floor. She descends halfway to the basement and sees Grady at the sink, one of Molly's frilly aprons tied around his waist. The record player is spinning, the volume turned up loud. Some old crooner is singing in rich tones that fill the basement. Grady hasn't heard her come in, so she watches from the stairs. He's shimmying, dancing in a modern way, almost a pop and lock to the old music. It is, quite frankly, adorable. She bets Grady would be a fun date at a dance. Hardly any boys from her high school danced at prom, never to any fast songs. And even for the slow ones, they had to be dragged to the dance floor. Grady's got a big stock pot on Molly's stove, the blue gas flame turned up high. There are grocery bags at his feet, filled with gallons of milk and cream. Amelia watches as he cracks an egg and slides it into the smoking cream stew. He is making ice cream. The record ends, and the needle begins to click as it continues to spin. Grady looks up from his pot, wanting to change it, but his hands are full. Amelia decides then to reveal herself and takes a couple of steps down. "Nice apron," she teases. "I'm hoping it will bring me luck." "When did you get all this stuff?"
"I drove to Walmart after I dropped you off last night," he says, and Amelia flushes, realizing just how persuasive she'd been last night. "Thought it'd be nice to take a break from the bookkeeping this morning and do something fun."
"You don't find bookkeeping fun? I figured that was mandatory for a business major." He pulls a face.
No. No one does."
He holds up his phone.
"Now, this is a recipe for the perfect vanilla ice cream, according to the New York Times. Figured that'd be a good place to start. I mean, if it's in the newspaper, it's got to be fact-checked." Amelia leans over the side of the big stock pot as Grady cracks another egg. It is filled to the brim. Should it be bubbling that much?
Shit!
Grady turns down the flame. I'll head back upstairs and keep searching.
Great.
He licks the back of a spoon and smiles, proud of himself.
Maybe I'll get good at this and I can create a brand new flavor. We can launch it this summer. Come up with a cool name.
I admire your confidence, Amelia says. Moo follows Amelia up to the second floor. The letters Grady found yesterday sit unopened on the mantel. There's a big stack of boxes still to go through, but Amelia lies down on the braided rug, kicks off her keds, and begins to read Molly Mead's diary, planning to read one or maybe two entries before she gets started. An hour later, she's read through Christmas, then New Year's, and is approaching Valentine's Day. February 13th, 1945. I've never spent Valentine's Day alone before. Of course, I'd rather be with Wayne. He went all out last year. Candy, flowers, a pair of earrings. But I am excited about going to the movies with Tig. Coney Island with Betty Grable finally made it to Sand Lake. There's no pressure, no need for a new dress, to put on makeup or a girdle. We're going to eat all the popcorn we want. Hopefully the line will be long enough that I miss the newsreel. If not, I guess I'll just close my eyes. Sand Lake used to have its own movie theater? It had to be on Main Street, but where? Amelia's only ever seen movies at the 13-screen Megaplex in Beaumont. Amelia loves that theater. They have a whole wall of candy you buy by the pound. But it would be so cool if Sand Lake still had a single-screen theater. In fact, she might prefer it, because she and Kate could walk there, and parking at the Megaplex is always a zoo. She reads on, and winter turns into spring. April 1st, 1945. On Sunday, Holy Redeemer had a tag sale for the war effort. Mother wanted to hunt for things for my trousseau, and I dragged Tiggy along with us. We'll receive presents from the guests, of course, but Mother wants to make sure I have the essentials covered, everything Wayne and I will supposedly need to start our lives together when he comes home. It's funny. I used to dream about this moment. One of my favorite games to play growing up was House. I'd drape two tablecloths over the dining table, and then I'd select things of Mother's as if I were shopping in a department store. I always took the candy dish from the living room, always her apron with the embroidered strawberries, the gold hand mirror on her dressing table, the iron. When Daddy would come in for his lunch, he'd eat his sandwich in there with me, and I'd keep his coffee cup full like a doting wife. Mother had me by the elbow for most of the afternoon, holding things up for me, asking my opinion, debating what was most essential. I felt as if we were asking for something bad to happen, tempting fate. But to be agreeable, I said yes to everything, which really annoyed her. I'm not sure why. And I don't know how strong one's opinions could be about a bathroom scale. Eventually, things got so uncomfortable between us, Tiggy pretended to have left her purse on one of the tables, and the two of us broke away and walked around by ourselves for a while. I found an ice cream maker, a deep wooden bucket with a metal cap and a large handle you crank in a circle. When I asked Mrs. Finch if it still worked, she pinched my arm and said it takes a lot of cranking and warned me to go easy on it. I wouldn't want to surprise Wayne looking like an Atlas man when he came home. Tiggy thought my idea of playing around with it was a bit wacky, but the truth is that I can't bear the thought of sitting home for one more miserable Saturday night. Our friends have the same trouble. Going out for Coca-Colas or to see a movie only makes us feel guilty that we are here while the boys are over there. I don't have this problem with Wayne, of course, But everyone's deathly afraid to be seen by the parents of their sweethearts having anything that resembles fun. Maybe we can churn away our loneliness. And even if we can't, at least there'll be ice cream. Amelia rubs her fingers across the page, feeling the grooves from Molly pressing her pen tip against the paper, collapsing the distance between then and now. This is the day when Mead Creamery began. She can't turn pages fast enough, reading about those early ice cream nights on the lake, how every week more and more girls showed up. Molly wasn't thinking about starting a business, only an excuse to be with her friends. It's amazing how little has changed between then and now. Mead Creamery, in whatever form, has always been a place where girls come together, support each other. Thanks to Molly. Eventually, Amelia reads an entry from May 3rd, 1945, about a month into Molly's ice cream nights. Molly writes about a new recipe with unconventional ingredients to substitute for the rationed sugar, and it's a huge hit with the girls. This has to be home sweet home. Amelia's so close, yet heartbreakingly far. Molly didn't leave a clue, not a single hint of what she put in that batch. She lays the diary down and texts Kate. It's right around the start of Kate's shift. How's it going down there? Great. I stopped at Rite Aid and bought a lipstick that I saw in Elle. It's supposedly a universally flattering pink, so we're putting it to the test. Ooh, let me see. Kate texts Amelia a picture that could be an advertisement, the three girls cuddled together. Kate's holding up the lipstick tube, and the shade is bright, a couple of notches away from electric. On Monsi, it's a shiny shade of coral. Burns' lips look perfectly bee-stung. Kate is prettiest of all, sandwiched in the middle, her blonde hair unbraided and mussed, her lips a deep, glossy rose. Amelia feels a sudden ache in her chest. What brand is it? She waits a minute for Kate to text back and then goes to the window. The line of customers is long. This gives Amelia an acute sense of dread. The more customers they have, the quicker their ice cream stock will go. And then, slowly, as if awakening from a dream, Amelia becomes aware of Grady calling her name. His footfalls on the stairs. She has barely a second to hide the diary in her tote bag before he bursts in. Amelia, I've been shouting. Come help me downstairs, and grab every towel you can find in the linen closet. Grady, your feet! His black Adidas are covered in thick white glop. Moo jumps down from the desk and licks the footprints he's left in the hallway. Amelia does as Grady has asked, filling her arms with towels and follows him as he speeds back down to the basement, where Molly Mead's Emery Thompson ice cream machine is spurting like a fountain, a geyser of half-frozen white ice cream spewing out from the top hatch, the spout, pretty much anywhere there's an opening. Grady has set an empty cardboard drum underneath the spout, but it has long since filled, and as the ice cream continues to flood out like soft serve, it splashes down in a frothy white cascade onto the floor. Shit, my phone, he says, slipping as he lunges toward the counter. He fishes a dripping rectangle out of the spillage on the counter, which is oozing down the front of the cabinets and making a pool on the floor. Turn the machine off! She shouts. The spill is icy on her feet, like stepping into a slushy winter puddle with bare feet. I did, but it won't stop coming! Amelia reaches over and pulls the plug. A few more chugs, a few more spews, and the machine comes to a rest. Grady shakes his head, stunned. I followed the recipe exactly, except I upped the quantities to make 3 gallons worth. But I double-checked my math. I don't know what happened. Grady, when you freeze something, it expands. 3 gallons of liquid in won't be 3 gallons of frozen ice cream out.
After a pitiful breath, Grady takes a taste of the ice cream with his finger. He winces and gags.
That's maybe the worst thing I've ever tasted.
Amelia carefully carries the 3-gallon drum, full to the brim, over to the sink. She tips it in and runs the hot water.
Don't help me clean up. Just go back upstairs and keep looking.
Amelia swallows. She hasn't done much today besides read Molly's diary. It will go way faster if I help you. It takes the better part of an hour to get the kitchen back to decent shape. Is there a manual for this thing? Amelia asks. I wonder how you're supposed to clean it.
If there is, I haven't found it.
Amelia Googles Emery Thompson, hoping she can find some instructions online. She finds better. It turns out that Emery Thompson has been making ice cream machines for over 100 years, and their website is full of useful information, recipes, video demonstrations, and troubleshooting Q&As. Grady gathers up a full trash bag.
I have to go upload some discussion questions for one of my summer classes, but then I'll start over.
He shakes his head like that's the last thing he wants to do.
My friends rented scooters and are tooling around Milan tonight on a guided street food tour. And instead, I'm here, destroying a business that's been in my family for generations.
Why don't I try making the next batch? He looks sincerely grateful.
By all means.
He places a hand on her shoulder and playfully says,
You can't do worse than I did.
As he lifts it off, his fingers graze her neck ever so slightly, and Amelia finds herself holding her breath. She doesn't exhale until he's gone. She sits down on the couch and cues up a video from the Emery Thompson website called Ice Cream 101. Just as it starts playing, she gets a text from Kate.
Hey, any chance you can come down here for a sec?
Shoot, terrible timing. Amelia presses pause and types back,
Why, are you slammed?
No, I want you to try this lipstick. Amelia doesn't feel like she can tell Kate no, so she slips out and hurries down to the stand. She's a few feet from the door when she hears the girls squealing and laughing and singing along to the radio. Amelia's relieved everything's okay, though she feels a little pang of jealousy at how much fun they're having without her. But her heart sinks as she steps inside. Kate has the stand radio turned up loud enough that customers have to shout their orders over the music. The trash can is overflowing. The order windows are greasy with fingerprints. No one is looking at her chore chart, that's for sure. Amelia could stay down here and clean up the mess before returning to the farmhouse, but she did just promise Grady that she'd get to work on the ice cream. That's just as important, if not more so, than what's happening down at the stand, isn't it? Thankfully, none of the girls even noticed Amelia come in, or just as quickly slip back out. Chapter 22. Amelia twists her hair into a tight bun and secures it with an elastic. She selects one of Molly's aprons, a peach cotton one with tiny embroidered strawberries running along the edges, less for the mess and more for the luck it might bring her. She begins with a simple batch of vanilla. With the help of the ice cream videos, she can see where Grady's attempt went wrong, aside from his measuring. A few places, actually. He slid in the eggs too fast, into cream that was too hot, and he didn't allow his base to properly chill before running it through the machine. Whether she'll do any better remains to be seen. Her hands are shaking as she measures out the ingredients she'll need, but she's comforted by the fact that Molly Mead didn't know what she was doing at first either. Amelia knows this for sure. She read it in Molly's own words. Sugar, skim milk powder, and fresh milk go into the saucepan. The last time she touched a whisk, she was making cupcakes for Kate's birthday from a boxed mix. But she grabs one and has at it while the mixture froths and bubbles. When she thinks everything is well blended, she whisks hard for another minute longer, just to make sure. Next comes the cream. Next one, vanilla bean, she fishes out from the sticky brown syrup with her fingers. She stares at a thermometer, waiting for the thin red needle to rise until it hits 110 degrees. The eggs get whisked in a separate bowl, and she uses a little dollop of the hot cream mixture to warm them. She slides the eggs in and brings up the heat, then swiftly removes the saucepan from the stove. One of the videos recommended steeping this mixture, the base, for at least 24 hours for maximum flavor, but there's no time for that. Anyway, this is just a test. She's pretty sure it won't be anywhere near good enough. From another video, she learned that there's a difference between the two refrigerators in Molly's kitchen. One is a blast chiller, which cools down the bases after they've been pasteurized. The other is a deep freezer, basically a smaller version of the walk-in down at the stand, which hardens the ice cream up after the base is run through the machine. Amelia never knew there were so many complex intricacies to making ice cream. Molly Mead was practically a scientist. Since Amelia is making a small batch, just to see if she can even do it, she doesn't think she needs to leave it in the blast chiller for the full hour the video recommends. Instead, she sets an alarm on her phone for 30 minutes. She puts on one of Molly's old records, the Andrews Sisters, counts the grooves, and lines up the needle with Rum and Coca-Cola, a song she knows from the oldies station. She dances while cleaning up her mess, loving the nostalgic crackle it has. The songs after she's never heard before. Let There Be Love, I'll Be With You in Apple Blossom Time, Last Night on the Back Porch. When she finishes cleaning up, there's about 10 minutes left on the timer. She goes upstairs to Molly's office. She could, and probably should, sort through the contents of one more banker's box. But her mind hinges back to the diary. May 27th, 1945. After VE Day, everyone in Sand Lake is cautiously optimistic that the war will end soon. But fear still darkens me most days. Here are my three greatest worries. 1. Wayne will die, and we will never be married. 2. One or both of my brothers will die, and my family, my mother in particular, will never recover. 3. Our dairy will not survive. On a good day, I can mostly push them out of my head, but lately, it's been harder. And this week, I've been in a sheer panic. I haven't gotten a letter from Wayne since the beginning of May. The girls go out of their way to tell me what a mess the mail service is over there, with the boys getting moved around so much. Or how Sylvia Schur hadn't heard from Neil George for weeks, only to get a bundle of 5 letters at once. I have kept writing to him anyway. That's the only thing I can do. I write my brothers, too, every Sunday, even though they never write me back, just Mother. Making ice cream for the girls is my only relief right now. When I'm not, I'm sour as a lemon. And I know I've been terrible to Tiggy. Bless her, she lets me have my moments. If I get a letter, everything will be okay. Please, God, send him home to me. When the batch is done, Amelia scoops a ball into a teacup and brings it upstairs. Grady is back at work in the living room, intensely typing on his laptop. His brow is furrowed, and he's muttering quietly to himself. He reminds her of how her mom and her dad look every year around tax time, like they are having no fun at all. I have something for you to try.
Hey! He shuts his laptop. Is that what I think it is?
His blues brighten as he bolts up, hurdles the coffee table, and races over to her.
Please don't be excited. I mean, it's edible, but it's not very good.
He takes the spoon.
Amelia, what are you talking about? This is great. You've conquered vanilla.
It's not, she insists. Take another taste, but this time rub the ice cream against the roof of your mouth.
Grady does as instructed. Do you taste those little waxy pieces?
Yeah.
That means I let it churn too long. Also, it barely tastes like vanilla. Molly's vanilla was like... pow. Mine is a whisper. She sighs. I want to cook up another batch, but I need more ingredients.
I'll head to the store right now.
And his enthusiasm makes her laugh.
Anything else I can do?
Keep looking for the recipes when you get back, Amelia says. And pray for rain.
Chapter 23.
Turns out there are lots of ways to screw up ice cream. Turns out it's not easy to make something not just good, but deliciously good. Molly's ice creams, Amelia realizes now, are deceptively simple. There's chocolate, and then there's chocolate. Like comparing a Hershey's Kiss with a Godiva truffle. And though her failures give her a newfound respect for Molly, it's also incredibly frustrating because she is so painfully far from getting it right. Still, she keeps at it for the rest of the day, batch after batch, cycling through all aspects of the process, cooking up a new base with ingredients slightly tweaked from the last, while another batch cools in the blast chiller, while another one churns inside the ice cream maker. Repeat, repeat, repeat. Her arms feel heavier than after gym class push-ups, and her lower back aches from standing. And yet, time passes like magic. Hours feel like minutes. Minutes feel like nothing. If the learning curve weren't so steep, Amelia might believe she was getting somewhere. There is no eyeballing, no freestyling, the way her dad likes to in the kitchen. A pinch of this, a glug of that. Making ice cream isn't cooking, it's chemistry. Unfortunately, Amelia got a B in chemistry her sophomore year, unjustly, she believed, and she never forgave Mr. Dunlap for it, returning his hellos with a frown for the rest of high school once she got her report card. Now, she knows a B was too generous. Cringing, she thinks about apologizing to him the next time he comes to the stand, maybe even paying for his order out of her tips. Take chocolate. Add too much of Molly's homemade fudge sauce, and the ice cream is thin and runny. Too little, and the chocolate flavor is nothing but an undertone, muted by other ingredients. Or it might taste decent as a finished base out of the blast chiller, but once it goes through the ice cream machine, the flavor is cloudy. And that's just the flavoring. If the measurement of any ingredient isn't just right, the ice cream comes out gritty, or buttery, or eggy. Timing is also a huge issue. Churn it too little in the ice cream machine and it pours out a slushy mess that won't ever firm up, no matter how long you put it in the deep freezer. Churn it too long and the ice cream comes out solid as a brick, hard enough to snap a plastic spoon in half. It's an almost impossible puzzle that Amelia must solve three different times for vanilla, chocolate, and strawberry. And home sweet home? She doesn't even know where to start with that one. The clock is ticking, and the remaining stock dwindling. Grady comes down looking somber.
I have bad news.
What? Amelia doesn't take her eyes off the whirling ice cream machine, like a kid too close to the television. The batch she's churning now is the closest she's come. Good dark color, good depth of chocolatiness when the base went in.
I've gone through all the boxes upstairs. No recipes.
His voice is almost toneless, resigned. It's all on her now. Amelia pushes the lever, and a stream of ice cream comes sliding out the chute. Grady asks,
"Can I try?"
But Amelia sees something she doesn't like. The color is off. She takes a taste and knows immediately it's tainted. "I forgot to clean the machine out from the last batch of strawberry I ran."
"Chocolate and strawberries go together, though, right? That's a thing," Grady says, trying to be helpful.
She bites her lip and stares up at the ceiling, hoping to keep the tears in her eyes from spilling down her cheeks. She made a dumb mistake because she's tired. But there's no time for dumb mistakes. She takes the entire drum over to the sink and turns on the hot water full blast so the ice cream breaks apart and sinks down the drain.
"Amelia, wait! It could have been good!"
"No, I screwed it up." He softens his tone when he sees how near to tears she is.
"At this point, I think we give up on right and aim for good enough."
Amelia shakes her head. "I don't know if I can do that." The front doorbell rings. Jogging upstairs, he says,
"You can't let this get personal. It's business."
Amelia leans her hands against the counter, stretches her back. Everything about this business is becoming very personal to her.
"So this is where the magic happens."
Kate comes down the stairs. Amelia rushes over and almost tackles her in a hug.
"Kate!
I've been texting you all afternoon." Kate squeezes her back, then peels away, concerned.
"You're soaked."
Amelia glances down at herself. There are sweat marks on her shirt, from her armpits down to her waist.
"No air conditioning."
She feels woozy and leans against the refrigerator. It's cool against her skin. "What time is it?"
6:30.
Kate's tone is clipped. "Have you had dinner yet? Or even lunch?"
"I'll order us some pizza,"
Grady volunteers, having only made it halfway down the stairs before he pivots and heads back up.
"She might not want pizza,"
Kate calls back, snippy. And then to Amelia,
"You've been working for how long today? Have you even taken one break?"
9 hours? 10? Amelia says. "And no, not yet." Grady descends the basement steps, uneasy.
"Pizza's on the way. Kate, do you want to join us?"
"I don't think so," Kate says.
"Oh, and Amelia, I can drive you home tonight, whenever you want to call it quits,"
Grady offers. Kate gives a thin-lipped smile to Grady. To Amelia, she says sharply, "Walk me out." It feels disorienting to be outside after spending hours in Molly Mead's basement. Amelia takes a deep breath, enjoying the fresh air and the pinkish evening light.
"Thanks. I think you're right. I needed this to clear my head."
"Is something going on between you and Grady?"
Amelia startles.
"No, I'm just trying to help the stand."
"How do you see this ending?"
"I haven't thought about it."
Kate takes her by the shoulders.
"Well, maybe you should, before you get trapped up here making ice cream day in and day out like Molly Mead."
"That's not going to happen."
"I know you. You're sensitive, you're caring, and you'll do anything for anybody. Those are the things I love best about you, Amelia. But they also make you vulnerable to getting taken advantage of. You are so invested in this ice cream stand and helping Grady be a success, and you've known him for, what, a couple of weeks?"
"I want to figure this out." Kate shakes her head.
"If I'd known it would be like this..."
"Like what?"
"Let me ask you something. Is this the summer you wanted? Because I gotta be honest, it's not the one I wanted. I mean, sure, I'm having fun with all the girls, but I wish you were with me.
A lump rises in Amelia's throat. I know. I do too.
Has she let Grady take advantage of her niceness? We've worked 1 week with each other this summer. 1 week. We're short-staffed. I'm picking up all your slack, trying to keep everyone happy and having fun for no thanks, no extra pay. And the reason why I came back was so that we could hang out together. I mean, that's how you said it would be.
I'm sorry, Amelia whispers.
What are you even doing down there? Just, like, Frankensteining a bunch of random recipes together?
Basically.
That sounds miserable.
Except it's really not. Sure, I'm tired, I'm frustrated, but I'm having fun trying to solve this puzzle.
It sounds like you have Stockholm Syndrome.
I think I'm getting close.
To home sweet home?
No, I haven't even attempted that one. I'm talking about chocolate. Less so on strawberry. Every batch comes out icy, and with vanilla, I'm still...
Will you please listen to yourself? You sound ridiculous.
Amelia gazes down at her kids. Yes, she looks terrible. And yes, she was just crying. But this is important to her, and she doesn't understand why Kate's dismissing that. If I can't get this right, Mead Creamery is going to close. All the girls will be out of jobs.
When Molly died, I got another job that same day. We can get other jobs. So who cares?
Amelia nods like she concedes Kate's point, even though she does care. She can't explain why, but she cares so freaking much.
Kate continues, and to be honest, I doubt any of the girls will want to come back after this summer. The freezer is almost empty. You're totally MIA. They know something's up. I'm doing my best to keep Grady secret, but there's a major undercurrent of what the hell is going on here.
Amelia's phone alarm begins to chime. Another batch is ready to go into the ice cream machine. Another chance. Hopefully, another step closer.
I promise I will make this up to you, and all the girls, too, Amelia says, backing away from Kate. But making amends will have to happen later. Back in the basement, she finds Grady waiting for her, wringing his hands.
Is everything okay?
Yeah, it's fine.
You don't have to stay. I know this is my problem, and I don't want to cause trouble between you and Kate.
I want to stay, Amelia says. And it feels good to tell someone, even if it's just Grady, that tiny truth. Chapter 24. Amelia lets herself in the next morning. She's halfway to the basement door when Grady grabs her hand.
Hey, how about some breakfast? You'll see I wasn't lying about being good at eggs.
He pulls her 1, 2 steps toward the kitchen with a friendly smile. Amelia imagines Grady in the Truman dorms, the morning after a frat party, making the same pitch to get a girl to cut class and watch TV in his twin bed. In the next second, she imagines she is that girl. The thought is intoxicating, but also scary. Having that freedom, no parents around watching to make sure she's sleeping in her own bed at night. But Grady is off limits, and if there's any line that Amelia absolutely, positively cannot cross, it's that one.
I'm good, thanks. I'll be downstairs if you need me.
Before starting up another batch, Amelia opens Molly's diary and consults the last entry she read before falling asleep the night before.
June 5th, 1945. One of my mother's bridge friends told me about a trick yesterday afternoon. You know you've got a real diamond in your engagement ring if it'll scratch glass. When I told Tiggy, she said, maybe you should check yours. And I said Wayne Lumsden would never propose marriage to me with a fake diamond. So try it, she teased, unless you're scared. The only thing that scared me was how much Tiggy seemed to want my diamond to be fake. I shouldn't have been surprised. The truth is that Tiggy and Wayne have never gotten along. Tiggy thinks Wayne's cocky. She's not wrong. He is. But I've always loved his confidence. He seems so much stronger than any of the boys in our grade. I think it's because of what he went through in his family, left to fend for himself at such a young age. When it's just me and him, he's sweet as a kitten. But I've seen him get hot-tempered plenty. Since he shipped out, I've come to think of this as a blessing, because I know Wayne can handle whatever comes his way over there. But boy, oh boy, does he love to tease Tiggy. I wish I'd never told him that it bothers her, because once I did, he seemed to enjoy doing it even more. Sometimes he'll even rib her in the letters he sends to me, knowing I read them out loud to the other girls. Near the end, he'll write something like, "Tell Tig I've been passing her picture around to the single guys in my unit. So far, no takers besides our cook. He's 60 and only has 3 fingers, but beggars can't be choosers." I am always careful to skip over those parts. I honestly think they're a bit jealous of each other, which is silly. I can have room in my life for a best friend and a husband. Anyway, Tiggy wouldn't let it drop, so I slid the ring off my finger and went to the basement window. But before I made a scratch, I told Tig that, real diamond or not, Wayne and I were getting married. And in my next letter, I'm telling Wayne that Tig's agreed to be my maid of honor. If I get my way, the 3 of us, plus Tig's future husband, whoever he may be, are going to live happily ever after here in Sand Lake for the rest of our days. Setting down the diary, Amelia pulls back the curtains on every basement window until she finds the etching on the glass. Mrs. Wayne Lumsden. There's a loud rumble. Amelia shifts her focus from the scratches to the horizon, thinking it might be a storm rolling in. But the sun is out. There's not a cloud in the sky. Then she realizes the rumbling is Grady's feet on the floor above her, louder as he runs from the living room down the hallway and pulls open the basement door. Amelia lets go of the curtain. She doesn't have time to hide the diary before Grady's hopping down the stairs 2 at a time. It's in plain sight, right on the couch. Luckily, he's too frantic to notice.
Amelia, I need your help right now.
He takes her hand and pulls her back the way he just came. What's wrong? What's going on?
I just got a text from my dad. He's back in the States. He's on his way over here to check up on me. And if he thinks I'm not doing a good job, he's going to make me sell the place.
Her stomach lurches. Are you serious? I thought your family lived in Chicago.
He's part of this private jet club. He can go anywhere at any time.
He shakes his head, panting.
Everything needs to be perfect, and I need to look like I'm in charge.
You are in charge, Amelia reminds him, pointing to the misaligned buttons on his shirt. Grady gives her a pained stare.
Please help me. If he finds out about the ice cream, that we're days from going out of business.
Amelia wants him to finish, but he's so panicked her own heart starts to race. Grady and Amelia grab all his papers and textbooks, shove the pile into the Cadillac, and together they drive everything down to the stand. He can't bear to look at the jalopy of a food truck still parked in the same place it's been since the day he bought it. Kate's in the office, her bare feet up on the desk, painting her toenails. She's so startled she flinches, and the bottle almost topples over.
Jesus!
Luckily, Amelia grabs it just in time. She caps the bottle, opens the window, and tries to waft the smell out. Grady needs to be in here.
What? Kate says, indignant. Why?
Grady pushes into the office.
Someone very important is coming.
As soon as Kate stands up, he sits down at the desk. He takes out his laptop, spreads out some papers and his textbooks, and smooths his hair,
which he has wet and combed down in a way Amelia has not seen before. After frantically assessing the desk, he pulls out the calculator and a pad, then jumps up and grabs the morning receipts, which have already been calculated, but then spread them out as if they haven't. Sitting back down, he swings a skinny navy necktie around his neck and ties it faster than Amelia would have thought